Hello and welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
And we are back on this Thursday episode. We are talking about minute 68 through 69.
Nice.
Hell yeah. Nice. We're picking this up. I'm trucking through this minute, John.
Okay.
Partly because I have a vacation to get to right after we record.
Yeah.
I'm not going to suffer quality, but this is also the one that I have the most notes on.
Okay.
So.
I'm going to let you drive on this one then.
Okay, fine.
Or fly your horny bee.
My horny bee, yes.
Yeah, your horny bee.
Minute 68 through 69, we're picking back up with Raban in the middle of his retreat, his full-on retreat from the fight. And surprise, a Fremen got on board.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
And how... Okay, first off, we're going to see this theme throughout the minute. Just the super impressive grip strength on these people. I don't know how long it's been since you tried to do like a dead hang.
Probably like 20 years.
Okay.
If I had to guess.
That's a regular part of my gym routine.
Okay.
And that shit is hard. Now, I don't have particularly great grip strength.
Yeah.
It's not terrible. But I can get...
Well, you're not out here harking and gooning every day.
Right.
So
I can do like a minute on a good day.
Yeah.
And that's with no additional G-forces.
I was going to say, I know you can't do it on a quickly banking the ornithopter.
Right.
So...
So... This Fremen climbs up the ramp. Raban strikes as the ornithopter. I was reading directly off my notes. Raban strikes directly as the ornithopter is making a really, really hard banking turn. And I just want to let you know, a steep turn is defined by the FAA as anything with a bank angle of 45 to 60 degrees in a fixed wing craft, or anything up to 1.5 times the standard rate of turn for... as indicated by the turn coordinator for a rotorcraft.
Okay. Ornithopters are not rotorcrafts.
I know.
Neither are they fixed wings.
That's why I included both. So, I mean, we have to interpolate the difference here, you know?
Got it. Does the FAA also define at which point you get bitches?
Haven't gotten to that part yet,
no.
Actually.
All right.
I'm sure they have some regulation on it. So, this hard... banking turn. It looks like they're also climbing as they're doing this too.
Yeah. Well, they have to have this hard banking turn because the ornithopter that's flying right next to them fucking explodes.
Is it an ornithopter that explodes?
It's an ornithopter that explodes. And, you know, yesterday you talked about how all the ornithopters were just exploding willy-nilly because they didn't have their shields on, but this one did.
Okay, that makes sense.
Trust me, I went through frame by frame.
I know, yeah. Well, that makes sense. They're up in the air. They can turn on the shields at that
but
point.
But how would the missile that we had seen previously in the movie have penetrated a shield had it been on? So my guess is that the missile had penetrated as the shield was coming on. We didn't actually see it. All I saw was that, you know, we did have the familiar red flash of the shield as the ornithopter was exploding.
Right.
Just maybe a goof from the editing bay.
Could be.
Or... there was more that got, you know, cut out.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, could be. Now, what this does, though, it causes them both to lose their footing.
Yes.
Now, Raban is...
large.
Yeah, he's a big guy. Not fat, necessarily, but, like, super stocky and muscular.
Yeah.
Regardless, he got a lot of weight on him. Now, what he's doing is he is holding on to, like, looks like one of the struts... that comes down, like the hydraulic struts, looks like, for the ramp. And his feet are completely off, like not on anything. He's just dangling in the air. And under a fair amount of additional G-forces, just gripping this strut. And that looks fucking hard.
Yeah.
And he's there for a good, like, maybe like 10 seconds.
It's a while, actually.
Yeah.
because we have all this banking motion and they don't immediately just like correct either, because they're still trying to escape, but also trying to knock the Fremen off.
Mm-hmm.
And this Fremen warrior, instead of, you know, reaching up, had basically fallen to the floor and is gripping onto the ramp. So they seemingly have a better hold of themselves than Rabin does.
Yeah, because they could use their arms and feet to hang on.
The thumbnail for this episode is that shot.
Oh, cool.
And I kind of came to this realization when I was making all the thumbnails. Episode 69 for part one and part two are people hanging off of ornithopter ramps.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. So eventually the ornithopter levels out.
Yep.
And Raban gets his footing and tries to like make it inside.
Like briefly gets his footing, and then he just immediately is like pulled down and face plants on the fucking ground.
Right.
And at this point, the Fremen or the Fedaiken warrior, you know, is basically on his back, raises her knife above her head, and we hear her yell, Formu Adib.
Yeah.
Only to then just take a fucking laser gun shot straight to the chest and get launched off, and we watch her body, you know, fall down to the desert.
Very, like, oh man, I was like, when I saw it, I was like, damn, that is like that. I didn't expect them to linger on the body just falling for that long, because it was a considerable amount of time. She takes this laser gun, looks like directly to the heart.
It's square in the chest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as this is the part that I went frame by frame on, because I wanted to see what they did with this, but the laser gun impacts the chest and she like, you know, recoils backwards. It pushes her back. And as it pushes her back, we actually get to see the path of the laser carve into like her chest. Like we see it carve down. And it's just that level of detail is so cool.
We had a similar thing just a few minutes ago when there was some goon on goon action.
Mm-hmm.
And we could see the laser, you know, also carve through the armor and everything. And it left that stereotypical just like burnt plasma, like melted, you know, metal path through the armor and everything too. So
nice. Now, as they go flying off to the ground, just a lifeless body falling to the ground, Raban is up and we get to see the Harkonnen soldier behind him who actually did the firing.
Yeah.
Don't know why they didn't do it earlier. Maybe they were just strapped in for the hard banking turn, but they got him. They got him eventually. It makes me wonder, had the Fedaiken not taken the time to go for Muad'Dib?
Oh, Rabin absolutely would have been dead.
Yeah. So this classic movie logic, they caught her monologuing. Brief monologue. They caught her monologuing, and the plan was spoiled because of it.
You caught me monologuing.
The Incredibles is one of the best movies, best Pixar movies.
It's one of the best movies.
Sure. I mean, Ratatouille will always be my top.
Your top Pixar?
Pixar, yeah.
Yeah. Oh. That's fair.
But yeah, they caught me monologuing, you sly son of a gun.
I thought it was you sly dog.
You sly dog, that's
you
what it
sly
was.
Dog, you caught me monologuing.
Yeah, that's what it is.
I don't know. I'll probably watch it after you leave.
Fair enough.
It's a good movie.
And Raban's winded. He's, you know, breathing heavy and looking off into the distance.
He's winded, but he's also scared. Like, his life probably is flashing right before his eyes in this moment. Like, homie almost died.
Yeah. So after Raban is, you know, standing in the open door of the ornithopter, just flying away, we get the smashiest of smash cuts.
Now, before we smashy of smash cuts, I do have some Art and Soul notes for this week.
Okay.
And they are only tied to what we just talked about for the first half of this minute.
Go for it.
So as we talked about last week with Alicia on the Orny Bee was created 1-to-1. And all of the shots were in this giant 20-ton machine that was way too large to put up on any kind of gimbal. Right. But as we know, Denis likes to shoot
as practically as possible. So a secondary smaller rig was made for this ramp scene.
Okay.
As, you know, the ornithopter was flying. It's put up on cranes and everything and lifted it into the air. The crew called it the rotisserie rig.
Okay.
Which, love that.
Great, great.
And all of the scenes of Dave Bautista holding himself up with that super strong grip strength. Mm-hmm. That's not Dave Bautista. That's just a dummy that's like made to be Rabin size and shaped.
Oh, man.
And it's like there's pictures of this dummy just hanging on this fucking rotisserie rig.
That's really
and
funny.
The Fedaiken is also, you know, a dummy that's like bolted onto the bottom of the ramp and everything.
Cool.
So it's not actually Dave Bautista and everything because they didn't want to, you know, risk having an actor, you know, 40 feet in the air as this rig, this rotisserie rig is being held up by cranes and stuff, you know, for safety.
Tom Cruise would have done it. That's all I'm saying.
I want Dune redone, but Tom Cruise is Rabin.
Hell yeah. Yeah, that would be fun.
But also Tom Cruise is Fade.
Yeah.
And also Irulan.
Why don't he, Tom Cruise is
Tom Cruise is everyone.
He's just gonna clump it and and play every role.
I want a Mentat Tom Cruise.
Yep.
And a Sook Doctor Tom Cruise.
they're all just flat out running all the time. That's all they do. So many motorcycle stunts.
Actually, no, I take it back. Henry Cavill is Rabin. And he does the cocking his fist things again.
Sure.
Every
sure.
time. Every scene he's in, he cocks his fist. That's horrible casting, by the way.
Yeah. That would be awful. Is there anything else for Martin Sol before we get back to the
smash? It's the rotisserie rig and the dummy Rabin.
No.
So
did they call it rotisserie because it was going to like roll like yeah. this? Okay. Yeah. That's cool.
Because the rig was in the pictures of it. It is the most bare bones rig that you can imagine of like welded pieces of pipe together to make the outer frame
mm-hmm.
for the crane to hold on to.
Okay.
And then it's like the ramp and then just like the very tail end of the ornithopter gotcha. Where the ramp would connect to the body.
Rotisserie rig. I like that. That's yeah. really fun. Cool. So from here,
smash cut.
Yes, like I said, smashiest of smash cuts over to the princess, Irulan. I had a lot of trouble saying that name at the beginning of this.
We're gonna have to get Martin's synod together to pronounce Irulan, Irulan,
so
Irene.
we finally get the princess back.
It's been. Fuck off.
Sorry. That's one of my vocal stems, man. Like whenever yeah, I hear
no,
someone.
No, same. It's been 1 week since you looked at me.
And it's been about 60 or so episodes. 65 episodes since we've looked at the princess. See, now that we tied it in, you have to keep all that shit in. All
right. Unless I hate the way that I did the It's Been, and then I'm going to cut it all out. Fair. But then they're going to hear me talk about the It's Been, and they're going to be really confused, which would kind of be funny.
The magic of editing.
Movie magic. I love that video so much.
It is nice to have Florence Pugh back on screen, I got to say.
It is. So while we're talking about her, and I know we talked about this a little bit in the early episodes, but it's been over an hour, so we're here. I think her casting for this role, spot fucking on. She can be a very serious, like, voiced actress.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she will do a really good job in Messiah with the character that Irulan becomes in that. And I think she's going to do really well. I'm hoping she's going to do really well.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything I've seen her in that, like, I've ever been like, You weren't great in that.
Yeah, I mean,
I didn't watch any of the Marvel movies.
About to say, like, you know, I have to lower my expectations for Marvel movies. I've seen the one that she's in. I can't remember what the name of it. Endgame, maybe? I don't know.
No, I think she was in Black Widow and then the Thunderbolts movie that just came out. But
oh, okay.
Well, I haven't watched any since Infinity War Endgame. So
I saw Black Widow then because I've only seen one with her in. And I think she was the best of that movie. But that's already, for me personally, a low bar.
Sure. No, David Harbour was fun in that movie too.
Yeah, he was the Russian dad.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that was fun. Yeah, she's going to do great. She does great in the rest of this movie of the scenes that we get her in. I think she's going to do awesome in the next one. My beef with the role does not come from casting at all.
Okay.
It comes from something that we will talk about tomorrow.
Okay.
So I'm going to hold on to that beef for a moment.
Beeves to be determined.
the beef is held. The beef is being held.
The beef is not squashed right now.
No. So, off screen, as the princess takes her sip of tea, I'm assuming tea.
That's what my notes say too. She's holding a cup of something. Most realistically, it's probably tea.
Yeah. Probably spiced tea. Because they got the money. They can afford it.
They can afford it, but why would they drink spiced tea?
Well, that's commonly used as
there are the geriatric qualities of it and everything.
All the rich kids are microdosing spice.
No, they're doing purple space cocaine.
That's true. That, yeah, right. So, off screen, as she takes her sip,
snorting Samuda,
we hear Muad'Dib. And this is something new for the movie. It's the first time we've heard the Emperor. The Emperor's voice, anyways.
Yeah, because he didn't say anything when we first saw him. It was just
he was
the
staring.
Game of Cheops chess in the garden.
Yeah, and he was just looking contemplative as fuck, I think is how I described it, in that first scene with him. So, first time we've heard his voice, we get to see old buddy Chris Walken. And the Emperor goes, "Some new Fremen prophet." Irulan responds with, "It's not the first time we've had frictions with the Fremen." I wanted to make a note here that she sounds a lot more assured and confident, I guess, is maybe the word to use.
Sure.
Than he does. He sounds worried.
Yeah. As we've talked about, Emperor watching his, you know, empire crumble, you know, failing, feeble emperor kind of stuff, where she is the very, you know, calculated and methodical part of the family.
Yeah.
She's still holding on with a sense of power that she doesn't necessarily have, but her father is seemingly just giving away.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and, you know, she doesn't know. This is something we'll talk about tomorrow a lot more, but she doesn't know a lot of what's gone on behind the scenes. Yet.
Sure. Not yet.
Not yet. So Emperor Shaddam responds back to her. He says, "None of this magnitude." So yes, they've had problems with the Fremen, but none of this magnitude. And he takes a sip of his tea at this point. And then he gets a question, and I want to spend a little bit of time just talking about this question. And by a little bit, I have one comment on the question. He says, "So my dear daughter, how would you deal with this prophet?" So this question that he asked her, I thought it was really interesting that it mirrors the question the conversation that Stilgar and Paul had right after his naming ceremony.
Sure.
"What would you do? I would go north. I would go north too," that kind of thing. But it's reversed. So instead of Paul asking Stilgar how he would deal with the Harkonnens, the Emperor is asking his daughter, how would she deal with this prophet? So nice little symmetry that we see here.
Sure.
It's like poetry. I dig it. It rhymes.
I dig it.
Yeah.
We get to see the third person in this room.
Ever so briefly.
Ever so briefly, but we do get to see her. Good old Gaius Helen Moheim.
Mm-hmm.
She's back. She's standing behind Shaddam over his right shoulder. And Irulan is sitting off in front of Shaddam's left side, but she's sitting turned 90 degrees. So he's looking at like her profile and everything as he's talking to her.
Yeah.
Throughout all of this. So I want to talk about this room for a second.
Sure.
Arden Soul doesn't have anything on this.
Okay.
Which I thought was very interesting because like this is a super cool room. Very different kind of architecture from anything else that we've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this was also shot in Italy where the exterior scenes were done.
I had that thought too.
I think this was a set that was built.
That's where I landed. Anything internal?
This is, well, not everything internal, because some of the internal shots that we'll get later on and that we've had earlier with Irulan were in a already established place in Italy, and I forgot what the name of it was. Give me 1 second. I'm looking it up from my notes. We are in the Brion Sanctuary.
Yeah.
Near the village of Asolo, which is about an hour's drive from Venice.
I want to go there so bad, man. It looks so good.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And I have looked it up. They do tours of this.
I'm sure, especially since the movie, because the whole thing with, you know, being able to film there, because a lot of places had, we talked about this already, but a lot of, you know, movies wanted to film there and they always denied it, but they allowed Dune to be filmed there because the son of the Brion family is a big Dune and Denis Villeneuve fan. So he was like, yeah, absolutely. You can film here. Nice. So,
very cool.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't think this room is a part of the Brion Sanctuary. I think this is very specifically a set that was built for shooting this one scene, probably in Budapest.
Yeah. Yep.
But it's super cool because like Shaddam has a bench in the middle of this room and it's, you know, stepped down with, you know, multiple layers stepping down, but then the ceiling is also vaulted multiple layers up. So it feels like super big in the middle of the room, but like more claustrophobic near the outsides.
Interesting.
He's surrounded by like a bunch of like cushions and stuff on the floor. So it seems like
a conversation pit.
Yeah. I mean,
it's basically a conversation.
It's a conversation pit, but it also seems like a, you know, like a small council room.
Sure. Sure.
Where Shaddam is in the middle, you know, of this room, he is the center of attention, unlike other small councils that we see in, you know, other bits of fiction where it's like a long table or whatever. Like the one Game that I'm thinking of is the small council room from Game of Thrones and House of the Dragon. So
right. Cool.
Very cool architecture that we had here for a very small short scene, but
yeah.
I also like behind there's that long like bar, very thin window that just brings a lot of that light into the room as well.
I have consistently been impressed with the architecture of the royal houses in the various adaptations of Dune.
Yeah.
I mean, the Dune Prophecy had a lot of really cool architecture for the royal palace.
I'll have some beeves later on near the end of the movie.
Okay.
But we'll get to those then.
Okay, cool.
And it has nothing really to do with the architecture as it does some other parts of the royal court. One thing of note too is Gaius Helen Moheim is not just like as we had seen her before. Well, I guess she kind of is, but differently. So in part one, when we were very first introduced to her, she had her, you know, Chinese to-go box hat with the veil. But the veil that she had on was a very open veil where you could distinctly see her features and everything.
Yeah.
The veil that we have here is a much tighter veil, very dense. You can't see her face really at all unless the light is shining directly on her, kind of thing. So behind Shaddam in the scene, it just looks like a looming figure dressed in all black that's just like standing there with its hands crossed in front of her.
Yeah, it's her modesty veil.
Yeah.
Privacy veil, I should
sure
say. All right, cool. We're gonna get to hear a little bit more about her tomorrow.
Yeah, and we from will her. Our minute ends with Irulan beginning to take a deep breath.
Yep.
That's my last note for this minute.
Nice to see old GHM back on screen.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
Yeah, it has.
I think
first time this movie. I don't
think we've seen her in part two. Yeah,
it's the first time this movie. Makes sense that she's with the Emperor because that is her, first and foremost, her job is truthsayer to the Emperor.
Yep.
So not out of place. And we get to learn a little bit more about what she does tomorrow. So let's get on into it, man.
Alrighty. As always, you can find the Dune Minute online. We are on Blue Sky at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us. We'll be back to wrap this week up tomorrow with the last episode of the Dune Minute for the week. See you later.
See ya.